podcast. Nappy Opinions of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. And I said, hope you enjoy this podcast. Yeah, I really hope you enjoy it. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. It is a momentous occasion. We're finally here at our Revenge of the 90s show. We did this for the 80s a couple of months back. If you didn't hear that, go check that out. But the goal here is simple. We're going to run down our top 10 anime of the 1990s. Whole decade. We're going to cover a whole decade's worth of anime here and probably talk about a lot of the same shows. But it'll be fun times. Then we'll read some reader lists and good times. Joining me this time, it's Justin Savakis.
Howdy, everyone.
Bamboo is here.
Hi there.
And author of the Mike Tool Show, returning champion, Mike Tool. Hey, Mike.
Hey, folks. What's up?
Okay. So I'm ready to go. I've got my Hypercolor t-shirt on, my Jenko jeans.
Oh, God.
Damn.
I think I'm ready to
get... Street lights.
I'm just going to watch this brand new episode of Friends. But we're we do this in a round robin format. We'll mix up the order every time. But let's just get straight into it with number 10. And I want to start with Mike. Mike, you're number 10.
Oh, I'm going to lead this off well. Okay. What I want to talk about as my number 10, it's not recognized as great anime by a lot of people. But the thing about it is, this is an OVA series that was released between 1990 and 1992. It is completely 100% memorable. It is from a studio called Magic Bus, directed by Satoshi Dezaki, and it's called Mad Bull 34.
Ah, Jesus.
Really?
Do we have to talk about this?
It's not great, but you see this thing, and it lives in your brain forever.
That's true.
It's that kind of entertainment. It's
raw berserk. Yeah, like Faces of Death.
It's totally better than Faces of Death. Anyway, if for the five of you out there who haven't seen at least clips of it on YouTube, it's a completely ridiculous, exaggerated, fake out story of the, you know, gritty crime story of the NYPD with predator suits and crotch grenades and just all kinds of absolute craziness, and it's all pinned together by this really wonderful dub by Manga UK with New York accents that frequently strain credibility, but 20 years on, it's quotable. People, like I said, people see it and they remember it, and years later they talk about it. It's not very good. It's pretty bad. It's grindhouse fare, but I think it's great. And every time I see it, I see something new.
So, we just started right here. I'm curious, what were your when you were selecting your list, what were your personal criteria? Because everyone seems to have their own set rules that they make for themselves when they set about drilling down what their personal top are.
Well, I didn't approach this from, anything quantifiable. I just made a list of the things that I like the most, and, I'll go through why I like them the most on a case-by-case basis. But Mad Bull 34, makes the bottom of the list because, let's face it, it's a dark horse. It's not going to be on a lot of top 10 lists legitimately, but like I said, it sticks with you. I think it's a crying shame that, they never released it on DVD and marketed it as a comedy.
Well, yeah, it's not going to be on any other list because Daryl's not here this time.
So. Right.
No, but I am curious. Did you have any... Actually, we should do this for everybody. Since we're still at number 10 here, did you have any almost-rans, any runner-ups? Anyone that?
Oh, several. Several. I mean, my biggest also-ran, which just missed the list, there are a couple of titles on it that are too similar, but that would be The Big O, which came out in 1999 on TV.
Yeah.
That was impressive fare. It gave kind of an existential and film noir into the giant robot approach, and it really just strained and successfully broke free from a 13 episode format. I thought it was pretty impressive the way they structured it with a cliffhanger ending, kind of not really expecting to get any more, but that's what got them more. There was that. There was Cyber City OEDO, which is just, you know, 1990 anime in pure elemental form. El Hazard, the first OVA series, just wonderful, sweeping adventure. Irresponsible Captain Tyler, which is
amazing, you know, show.
Yeah, absolutely. Just basically early 90s, you can't really get better than that. And Martian successor Nadesco, which I thought was operated on many different levels and had a great ensemble cast of characters. And Ghost in the Shell, but I have a feeling we'll probably touch on Ghost in the Shell.
I don't know, man. It's not on my list either.
Nor mine.
It's not on your...
Not on mine.
Oh, man.
Well, okay.
Wow.
No one put Ghost in the Shell.
Damn. That might annoy a few people, because I saw that on a lot of Twitter list submissions.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, I saw the Ghost in the Shell movie at the North American premiere at Anime East 95, and I was, you know, there was a time there when I was in the theater full of hyped up people, and I was struggling to stay awake.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, ultimately, I thought it was a pretty good movie, but I was just really confused by Oshii's extreme visual departure from Shiro's comics. It didn't feel like a good fit, and it didn't really establish kind of a milieu for what it was. I feel like the second movie did a better job of that.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you on the it's kind of boring, and therefore it's not on my list. I like that movie a lot, but it is dull. I don't watch it for fun. Or really all that often at all. I rewatched it for this, and I had a hard time, yeah, staying awake.
It has a lot of really great moments, but I don't think it really gels as much as well as I remembered it.
Yeah.
Me, that movie is kind of on the list of like movies that anime fans should watch, but that I don't necessarily want to watch. I had to go back and watch again.
It's kind of homeworky.
Yeah.
All right, so that's your number 10, Mad Bull 34. Yep. Thanks for
I've already completely ruined the list. Thank you, everyone, for this opportunity.
All right, Bamboo, you're up.
Well, so I guess before I go into my top 10, I do want to kind of address what Justin said about how I kind of made the list. Okay. And what's interesting for me as I was kind of going through the 90s, like year by year, is that I didn't really become like a huge anime fan until maybe like 1996, 1997. Hmm. And around that time I was in junior high. Okay. So, at that time I basically got into anime from my best friend whose dad owns like a video rental store. So they had all the old, like, you know, the old releases, all the old VHSs, and also a ton of fan subs. So most of my list really begins in like 95, 96, even though there are a few that I watched from the early 90s that eventually got released in the US that I had to review at some point. And I noticed that a lot of the series or movies that I like kind of follow the same themes. Like, I really liked a lot of shoujo, and I really liked a lot of the weird kind of dark, like, is this reality ? Kind of shows, which I don't know if that reflects how I felt as a junior high schooler. I don't know. That having been said, my number 10 is also, it's not really a great show, but I really love the show because this is the show that pretty much turned me into an anime fan, and that is Fushigi Yugi.
All right. I was hoping that would be on someone's list.
Wow. It is on my list for sure. I've been afraid to rewatch it in whole because I'm actually afraid that it won't stand up in time. There's definitely a few like arcs that I've rewatched that I still really enjoy, but... So it's, you know, I mean, it's super cheesy. It's really campy. It's a little, I mean, it's super soapy. And for those who haven't watched it or read the manga, basically it's your typical reverse harem show where some Japanese girl gets whisked away into like ancient Japan, and then she has to accomplish some kind of task with the help of like all these hot dudes.
The thing is, Bamboo, you say it's your typical, but I think why it's on your list is because at the time it wasn't typical, was
it? Right. No, it wasn't. And in fact, but see, it's also hard for me to say something like that because it was seriously one of the first anime series that I like deeply fell in love with. It holds a lot of nostalgic value for me just because it was one of the first shows that I had watched in completion. Especially, you know, I had watched it like with one of my best friends. We obsessed over it. Like, we cosplayed it. We drew massive amounts of fan art. Like, we wrote fan fiction. Like, this was the first series that I just, like, head first dove in, completely obsessed. So this holds a lot of, like, really just positive memories of you know, just being like a big old anime fan nerd. I mean, it's so that's why this list pretty much has to include the series. It's also a fairly, I guess, well crafted series in the sense that there are a lot of emotions that get tugged out of you. It's pretty hard to watch this show and not cry at least once. There's a lot. I mean, for the first time, you know, as a junior high schooler, this is the first time I had ever watched a cartoon in which people died and stayed dead. Mm. You know, I had watched some movies before that, like Ninja Scroll, whatever. But like those movies don't really give you a chance to actually really like the characters and to actually care about the characters. So, you know, imagine me like 30 episodes in. These are characters that I've been watching and you know, falling in love with for like 30 episodes, just dying. And to me, that was really surprising and shocking. And as a new anime viewer, like that was my first exposure to an art medium in which, you know, people aren't afraid to kill favorite characters. So that series had a lot of, I guess, impact with me that kind of stuck for the rest of my continued fandom.
It's solid camp. I rewatched a chunk of it in preparation for this to see if I would put it on my list, and no. But it is solid camp, and it is still fun to watch. It is hilariously cheaply animated.
Yeah, the animation's just ass.
It's really bad. But it is a fun. It is fun. I will give it that, and I have a real soft spot for the score.
It's a really good musical score, and you know the way they used it is really interesting because I can't remember any other show, even Shoujo was of that era was particularly good at this, but nothing really beat Fushigi Yugi in terms of the way it ended each episode, just like, oh, here's the music, oh my god, holy shit, this is gonna happen, oh, it's over, fuck
yeah, I remember that. that same music sting, wow. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I gotta get that again. I think that's one of the first anime CDs that I bought was that Sanmei version of the
Yeah. I bought all of those CDs and, classics. Like, with all the character albums and insert songs and everything. I mean, I just really was obsessed with this series.
That had some of the worst character image songs.
Those were bad.
They were next to, like, the Slayer's character image songs.
Yeah, they were... it's the ones from the OVA aren't as bad, but the ones from the actual series are pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's just someone banging on a really cheap sounding synthesizer, and then someone starts singing about their character traits.
When I started watching the series, like that was the height of my like weird, awkward teenage weeaboo-ness, and you know, I was like dropping weird Japanese words into things like that. That was the height of like when I was really bad as a fan.
Memories.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So, did you have any runner ups?
I had a lot of runner ups. And ultimately a lot of my runner ups are, in a similar kind of shoujo fluffy vein. I really, really, really love, Marmalade Boy. I think it's a really great show. Yes. It's fantastic. It's just pure, just like shoujo soap opera. The characters are great. The animation is also pretty terrible. And in fact, I was reminded of the fact that so many shows from the 90s do that really annoying thing where like people's eyes and their like eyebrows and their eyelashes, like they kind of shine through their hair.
Yeah, that was really common.
I still like that.
For common. Well, and it's still prevalent in some current series. But it's just like watching it now is just like, oh god, like whoa. It's really distracting.
I wonder if that made it just faster to draw.
Maybe. I'm sure it did. I mean, but yeah, so Marmalade Boy was almost on the list. Boys Over Flowers was almost on the list. Escaflowne was almost on the list. Just a lot of, I guess, mid-90s, you know, female heroine type shows that I thought were really fun and really cool.
Cool. All right. Okay, so that wraps up Bamboo's number 10. Justin, you want to get into your machinations for this list?
Well, yeah, I mean... I didn't rewatch nearly as much stuff as you did, because I had actually gone back and rewatched a lot of my old favorites when I did Buried Treasure a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they were still somewhat fresh in my mind. The problem was I tried to go back and think of all this, like, if I were just watching these for the first time now, or if I would be able to show them to people who are fairly new to fandom. And a shocking number of so-called classics and even stuff I enjoyed quite a bit back then just don't hold up at all. And it's not like I would hate them. It's just that I wouldn't have any sort of emotional connection to them at all.
Yeah.
I would just be like, meh, that was fun.
Yeah.
And move on and forget about them. So I guess the ultimate question I ended up asking myself with everything was, does it still make me feel something? Hmm. And because that's really the be-all and end-all of whether or not I like a show is if I have an emotional response to it. So, and that actually mixed up my list quite a bit, because some of the shows that I thought I always liked, I went back and I'm like, yeah, it just, maybe I rewatched it too many times, lost its impact entirely on me. And then I went back and thought about some of the shows that really socked me in the jaw back when I saw them for the first time, revisited them, and I was kind of shocked to discover, wow, yeah, they still have a huge impact on me. So that's how I went about this.
Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and get to your number 10 then.
All right. My number 10 is Heroic Legend of Arslan Part 1.
Oh, okay. I thought this would be higher on your list.
Yeah, it's definitely a number 10. It's not my number. It's not anywhere good enough to be on my top five or anything. But in terms of really very quickly and very efficiently building a world with nothing but gorgeous, drop-dead gorgeous visuals and just kind of taking you to another place and kind of giving you that really amazing out-of-body experience that only the best fantasy can, I think this show might be unmatched. It's really too bad that the following movie and the following OVA series really kind of fall off a cliff as far as both how interesting the story is and the visuals. But this first one, it's so damn pretty that you can't help but just kind of lose yourself in it.
Mm. Yeah, it had a similar effect on me, for sure. I mean, and it's interesting that you bring it up as a great example of fantasy, because unlike a lot of anime fantasy, it's low fantasy. It's kind of real-world fantasy.
Yeah, most, there's a little bit of smoke conjuring.
Yeah.
Which is actually why I like it, because honestly, you get too much into the Tolkien kind of, you know, wizards and shit, and I tune out entirely.
Yeah, even Berserk has kind of been affected pretty profoundly by that stuff later on in the run of the manga.
Yeah,
that's a good OVA, and yeah, that's something that that gets overlooked a lot. I remember really liking the character Quishward.
There's a number of really cool, memorable characters in this show, and even though it's wonky in places, I really like the manga UK dub of it because, well, it satisfies my Hollywood-born requirement that people in antiquity talk with British accents.
Hey, it really works.
It does, and it really adds to the atmosphere because I'm like, well, they're fancy now. But also, it adds nuance to the characters in a way that I wasn't really. I think the original does have a little bit of Japanese voice actor ishness where just kind of everyone's doing a character rather than acting. And I feel like in the UK dub, they're actually acting. So,
right.
That's all I got for that. Should I go into my, honorable mentions?
Before you do that, I just want to say I watched this, in the lead up to this list because I had actually never seen it. And I agree with you. It's all time and place, and it does sort of whisk you away visually. The story didn't really do much for me, but yeah, visually it's a feast. But anyway, yeah. So your runner ups.
Yeah. Oh, I almost forgot. The ending theme is so pretty. I love that song.
Yes, that is. Yeah.
All right. My honorable mentions: Ghost in the Shell, which we talked about. Utena, which I'm surprised it didn't make my list, but it was. Pretty close. It was a difficult decision to leave that off. Marmalade Boy also. Princess Mononoke, which I was surprised didn't make the list.
Wow,
but it was just a little too... I don't want to say perfect, but it was a little too like traditional movie for me to love as much as something that really it didn't shock me anymore, I guess is the best way of putting it. Mm. Initial D, because it's a guilty pleasure. Oh. And
it's
such a guilty pleasure, but and I love it so, but I couldn't do it. Jinro, which I still love filmically, but has lost a lot of its emotional impact, I think. And Porco Rosso, which I still think is Miyazaki's most adult, like, enjoyable for adults work. But is still just a little too nice for me to for it to really be a visceral memory, you know?
Yeah. Totally understandable. A lot of that stuff is on my list.
Yeah, now I'm really excited to hear your actual list, Justin.
Okay, so that brings us to my stuff. I did this the same way I did the 80s. I watched a ton of shit. Because if I'm doing a best of and we do these huge shows, I'm going to put all this time and effort into it. I want the list to be based on what I like and what is representative of me now, not based on memories I have or fond memories or anything like that. I wanted it to be, no, here's what I actually really love from that time period. And with a sober, straight-laced, maybe not straight-laced, but a completely with my eyes as I have them now, not you know who I was as a teenager.
So no nostalgia goggles.
Yeah, no nostalgia goggles. So I rewatched a lot of stuff, and stuff that I hadn't seen in 10 years, and stuff that I hadn't seen 15 years, and yeah, so it was a ton of things, and stuff I used it really as an excuse to watch a lot of stuff that I never got to in the first place, which was a sort of staggeringly long list of things. Well, not staggeringly long, but I had never seen Giant Robo, I had never seen Oh Wait, the Mess Team, I had never seen, Magic Knight Ray Earth, which I wish I still had never seen. Yeah, but I revisited a ton of stuff for this list, and a lot of it is all formative stuff for me. These are the shows that made me an anime fan. And, you know, a lot of my list, at least near the top, is stuff that made me an anime fan and continues to make me an anime fan, so I'm happy about that. My number 10, didn't expect it to be on here, but I rewatched it, and God, it just made me laugh. The original DigiCarrot.
Oh,
that got just under the wire. That's like 99, right?
It's very end of 99, but it still counts. Yeah. Those little those little 3-minute shorts are still hilarious. The sense of humor in them is unlike anything I had seen to that point, and really, I haven't seen anything like it since. And none of the other DigiCarrot stuff follows that same extremely dry, cynical sense of humor. That's in those shorts, because it's these three weirdos who manage a gamers and their little floating balloon friend who they abuse. And Digico is a gigantic brat, and her deadpan sister Puchiko usually has some sort of funny little stupid comment to make. And then there's the bunny girl, who's sort of a preening idol type, and they have 3-minute long, usually extremely funny adventures. And my favorite one is still the one where Gemma, their little yellow balloon friend, forgets to pee. And so he balloons out into this city-destroying monster and then remembers, oh, I have to pee.
Wow.
Those shorts are great. And rewatching them was fantastic. And it's just, that shit makes me laugh. And anime so rarely does that. So that's my number 10. My also-rans were stuff like Ninja Scroll. I guess that's not really that close to being an also-ran. Berserk isn't on my list. I really wanted to put it on there, but I rewatched it, and it's really good, but not as good as this other stuff. No Macross 7. Absolutely no Tenchi, which not even an also-ran. I'm just
why
saying.
Ever not?
Tenchi does not hold up.
There was so much of it.
Yeah,
that's not an also ran. That's a barely watch.
That's a fuck you, Tenchi. Whisper of the Heart didn't make it on. I rewatched that recently. I rewatched the Blu-ray, and I like that movie, but I liked it more as a teenager. I think it spoke to me a little bit more as a teenager. But mostly it was stuff that I thought would be on the list, but isn't. So like Kenshin, Kodocha's not on here. I revisited a lot of that stuff and thought this is okay. The reason I loved Kenshin so much is because it's the first shonen tournament show that I sat all the way through. So that's what made it special at the time. Now it's not very special. So that's my number 10. That wraps up my number 10. And you guys, I made the call for reader submissions on Twitter. I wanted your top three lists, so we'll get through as many of these as we can. Sorry, no guarantee. I got a shitload of them, so I don't think we'll get through them all. But I'm just going to start. I'll do three at a time. We'll see how that goes. Jacob YBM asks, his top three in no particular order, Yu Yu Hakusho, G Gundam, and Evangelion.
Christ.
G Gundam.
Wow. That's a pick. That's a lot of tournament fights.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Jillian Love Sykes says, Sailor Moon DBZ Pokemon. Well, isn't that everybody?
Hmm.
No.
Damn.
In terms of the masses, that's everybody. Yeah. And your buddy and mine, Gatsu Berserk, Princess Mononoke, Perfect Blue. Okay. So that brings us to number 9. So this time, Justin, let's start with you. Your number 9.
My number 9, I have a feeling will be on someone else's list later. Escaflowne TV.
Mm-hmm.
Really just, yeah, I mean, there is nothing and has never been anything special about girl gets whisked away to Magical Kingdom. As a plot point, but I think this might be the best that particular story has ever been done. It's just so even-handed, well-paced, and really, really strong emotional characterization.
Yeah.
Not to mention the music. Holy crap, the music still gives me chills.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's
a great soundtrack.
It really is. It's one of the great anime soundtracks, and I think one of the great anime, and it's just there's nothing particularly inventive about it. It's just kind of perfect.
Yes, I agree, and we'll be talking about the show later.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay. Bamboo, that brings us to you.
My number 9, and this comes with a caveat because there are certain parts of it that make it my number 9, is the classic film Otaku no Video.
Okay, I rewatched this too.
Hmm.
So I didn't really particularly love the actual animated parts. I think the storyline is a little hokey. Basically, this guy just wants to be like the Ota King, and you know, he starts making like garage kits, and then starts opening up like model kit factories, opens up like a fucking theme park, all this shit. I never really thought that was that interesting. What I really, really love about this movie are the little the live action bits that they throw in.
Portrait of No Taku.
Right. Which I always thought that was so fascinating. Because that's really kind of where I first kind of got my fascination with the otaku subculture. I think it's such an interesting subculture that really gets diluted in American fandom. In the U.S., obviously, you know, many people still use the word otaku in a very prideful manner. And I just think it's so interesting when you compare, like, U.S. fandom versus Japanese fandom. Otaku no Video, I always thought, just had such an interesting portrayal of fans as these just people who love their fandoms but are kind of ashamed of them in a way. I just think it's such an interesting look at nerds and nerd culture that I can't help but love this movie for those bits.
Yeah,
I'll admit I've been ashamed at times.
It's an interesting portrait of what it was then. Having rewatched it myself, I'm not sure how relevant Otaku no Video is. Those people seem like they're not they don't really resemble anime fans now, but that was pre-internet, so
right. But also, a lot of those portraits weren't of anime fans.
Sure, right, yeah.
I think it's interesting that you're bringing up an OVA and mentioning that your favorite parts of the OVA are the parts that are not animated. That's a curious statement.
Stuff that makes it that doesn't qualify it for this show.
I think it's such a classic, though.
So is that it?
Yeah, that should be.
Okay. Okay, so your number 9, Otaku no Video. Mike, that brings us to you. Your number 9.
My number nine is something that I watched more or less as the DVDs came out in the U.S. It's a pretty big fan favorite, and I watched several episodes of it recently to make sure it still held up. And that would be Morio Asaka, the great Morio Asaka's Madhouse TV series, Cardcaptor Sakura.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, that's one of my big shoujo entries on the list. And to me, you know, you take something like Sailor Moon, which is one of the big popular anime of the 90s. To me, Cardcaptor Sakura does a lot of the good things that Sailor Moon did, just from simple, like, good entertaining writing to just amazing color design and some incredible psychedelic imagery, and just does it better.
Yeah.
And, you know, the music holds up. In terms of Clamp anime, I think it's among the best. And it's just good stuff all around.
Yeah, I thought that might have made it on, because I really liked that show when it was coming out, you know, back when we would get the VHS fan subs. And I really liked it back then. And then, you know, I never made it all the way through it. It lost my interest, I think, like, after the first or maybe the second season. I stopped watching it, and it wasn't because I didn't like it. It's just I think I lost interest, and so that's why it's not on my list, because I've never seen the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty long series, and yeah, there are definitely parts of it where it's kind of a slog. But, I mean, just as a whole, I enjoyed it immensely. I thought it wrapped up really nicely. You know, the movies kind of put a cherry on top, and it was just good stuff. It's right up there with the best TV anime of the 90s in my book.
Nice. Okay. All right, that brings us to my number nine, Martian successor Nadesco. Thought this might be higher on the list, but I rewatched it, and because I couldn't really remember how this show wraps up. Frankly, I couldn't really remember that much about the larger story in Nadesco, but the show really holds up. It's really good. The first half is stronger than the last half, I think.
Definitely.
Considerably. But that show is all character work. And it's also extremely funny. The satire in it is really, really good. But the character work is just incredible. I found myself caring about virtually the entire cast and what was going to happen to them and their relationships with each other. The writing is really, really solid. And it's also quite funny. So it stopped being funny, you know, at some point. But no, it's a really, really solid show. The sense of pacing there is really, really nice. The animation's very nice. For the most part, it's very nice. It's a fantastic piece of science fiction that is also sort of commenting a little bit on anime itself.
Yeah, it works on multiple levels in that way. I think you're spot on about the writing. It's a show that really had me rooting for an accountant.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they do some fun stuff. Although in hindsight, I guess it's a little cheap. The Daigoji guy bit, where he's clearly supposed to be one of your favorite characters, and he dies in episode 3. It's a little cheap, but God, it's kind of a master stroke because no one saw that coming at the time. And even watching it now, even when I know it's coming, it's still like, that's some balls, man.
It's very surprising because they do such a good job of just making you fall in love with the character.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they really do. And, you know, what does everyone think about the dub for this show?
I
love it.
Dubbed.
Yeah, I think it's actually Matt Greenfield's best work by quite a margin.
Oh.
I would say that's not a bad statement to make at all. It's a great ensemble cast. Everyone is full of character. You know, there are no hokey accents. It's just, like you said before, Justin, it's just actors acting.
Right. And, well, also, ADV at the time used to think that the way you do comedy is to just have everyone talk like this all the time. Mm-hmm. And for some reason that works on this show, and it doesn't work on any other show.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah, didn't watch it dubbed, but I will say one of the things I love the most about this show is the opening theme, the opening sequence.
Yeah.
And especially how they lead into it. I love those little where they do the scene transition and it's like a flash, and they're playing that real sort of build that the music is building, and one of the characters is talking in sort of an abstract sense about what has happened and what might happen, and it goes right into the theme song. That is just real nice direction. That's really well done. I like that a lot. Fantastic show. It easily I would have put it higher, but everything else, you know, if I'm gonna put it somewhere, it's gonna be near the bottom because there's so much good stuff. Okay, so that's my number nine, and let's read some reader lists here. Baseman PhD lists number one, Trigun. Is Trigun on anyone else's list?
No,
I enjoyed it, but try rewatching it again. Some of the animation in it is just unbelievably horrible.
Oh, It is bad.
Not only that, the whole thing falls off a cliff at the halfway mark when it tries to go serious.
Yeah. Number two, Porcoroso. Number three, Perfect Blue. Okay, Chibi UFO lists. Number three, Cardcaptor Sakura. Number two, Evangelion. Number one, His and Her Circumstances. That was a near miss for me. That is a very good show, I think.
That's another one for me where first half works great, but you can really see where Anno starts fighting with the mangaka and eventually moves on. Kind of loses a touch there.
And Geek of Oz, Bebop, Eva, Ghost in the Shell. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty standard stuff. So that brings us to number eight. Moving right along here. Bamboo, your number eight.
My number eight is Serial Experiments Lane.
Okay.
It was it's really, really dark but interesting. Especially, I guess, rewatching it now when the internet is even more prevalent now than it was when it first came out. I just think it's a really interesting show. It turns out a lot of the things on my list are kind of play with that fine line between like reality and not reality. And Serial Experiments Lane, I think, does that wonderfully. Not only is it a really beautiful show, the character designs are beautiful, the music is beautiful, but there's just something so kind of dark about it that just wraps you up into the show. And the idea that our conscious could be spread in this kind of interconnected web, I think, is super cool, and it really appeals to me. I don't know if anyone else has the same fond recollections of the show as I do.
Mm-hmm.
I had never actually watched the whole thing, so I watched it for this. And I say this almost ashamedly, but I did find myself bored by it. So, yeah, it was okay. I didn't really think it was all that special. I like the opening theme a lot, so does everyone. But
Yeah. And you would be hard pressed to find someone who hates that opening.
Yeah, but the show itself, it kind of put me to sleep. I don't know.
It's honestly, I like it, but I'm not a huge fan of it. I think it's a little too impressed by its own atmosphere.
And
it doesn't really have as much to say as it thinks it does. The ending really kind of ruined it for me, to be honest, because it reveals that. The main character, not to give anything away, but she is not, what happens to her, is not relatable to anyone else. Mm. It's kind of a, yeah, but you're special reveal at the end, mm-hmm. to the point where it's just like, well, okay, that means that this doesn't mean anything.
I disagree with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with the, yeah, but you're special reveal. Recently, I don't know if you've been watching Madoka Magica.
Yeah.
That also has a very similar, well, yeah, but you're special, and so...
Hey, I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. All right. Okay, sorry, Zach. But,
Madoka Magica...
That kind of ending, because it's even in a lot of series like Eva or whatever, like, yeah, you're special. Like, sometimes that's just the answer to kind of... kick that character into, I guess, the next sphere of characterization.
I have nothing against "yeah, but you're special" as a plot element, and Madoka Magica, even though it was that plays prominently, it's introduced fairly early that she is with this with Lane. It's used as a Deus Ex Machina. It changes how you have to think of the whole thing, and it doesn't really the whole scope of the show seemed like a political commentary or a societal commentary about where people are finding themselves in relation to technology. So then if you take the main character and give her this amazing arc that you think is might say something, and then reveal at the ending, it's like, yeah, but this is just an isolated case because she's special.
I don't think that because her arc changes your perception of what the series started out to do, does not change the fact that those themes are still prevalent in the first half of the series. I don't think the last part of the series, even if it chooses to focus on something else. I don't think it changes at all the themes that you feel even watching the first few episodes.
No, it's true. And the first few episodes are fantastic, and I'll happily rewatch those first few episodes. I just want to forget that pretty much anything after the nightclub scene ever happens. And I have kind of forgotten it. After the nightclub scene, it's just all downhill from there, and it loses its meaning entirely, I think.
Interesting. Well, I've kept quiet on this because Lane is my number 8, too, actually.
Okay. Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry if I'm cutting in line, but I like the visual element of it. I liked the fact that this is something I've said before about some stuff. One notable example that a lot of people have seen is Minority Report, where I feel like the lighting is so important to the work as a whole. It's almost a character unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting and color design in Lane is definitely like that. The kind of oppressive green LED lighting, the buzzing power transformers. It's written by Chiaki Konaka, so it's not a story piece. It's a mood piece, like a lot of things. I like the way it presented this idea that, you know, your physical personality and your online personality could somehow be divorced from each other, dangerously so. I thought that was kind of an interesting concept, and I think because of that, it's one of the only, like, true cyberpunk anime that was ever made. That word gets thrown around a lot, but I think in a lot of fiction and in a lot of anime, it doesn't really apply. But it does apply in Lane's case, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the color design. That's one of the things that puts me off of Lane. I think maybe it's just because I find it ugly. I understand, like, conceptually, it works. Like, the quality is there. I get that it's cohesive artistically. Mm. But it's just so ugly to me. Like, it put me off of it. Plus, isn't that a super shiny digipaint show?
Yeah, but it's not quite as garish as the other ones of its era.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, that's 2 votes for Lane at number 8. So that brings us to you, Justin.
Yeah. Mine is Kite.
Okay.
Not the hentai version.
I was going to say, with or without the
keyboard. Oh, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't really like seeing my 12-year-olds raped, just saying.
Then you're not a real anime fan, Justin.
I know, that makes me a terrible person in the eyes of some. At any rate, the R-rated cut flows better. It actually, if you see it with the porn, it actually breaks up the action in a way that really kind of ruins the narrative.
I mean, isn't it established that the director, Yasuomi Umetsu, you know, put the porn scenes in there as kind of a commercial concession so we could get the thing made?
Yep. Yeah, and it was. And the show had a pretty tortured production history because he is just that big a pain in the ass. He went, I think, almost 8 months over schedule on episode 2.
Wow.
Because he's just that nuts. He has to, like... Apparently, if you look at the storyboards of this show, it's like looking at the show.
Wow.
Like he went so apeshit, and so much of the action is just meticulously choreographed and so well done. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it just has a mood and a sense of place that I get so seldom from anything. And it plays with the ideas of innocence in some very unexpected ways. I just think it's a very, very gorgeous piece of hyper-violent pop art, and that's just, it's how it lives in my memory, and it's something I recall on occasion just as, you know, just part of my visual vocabulary.
Nice. Yeah, I have not seen that in a very long time. And it never really made much of an impact on me when I did see it, so I didn't bother revisiting it, but maybe I should.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, but I also like to remind people that Yasuomi Umetsu worked on Kodocha.
Well, as a key animator, not a creative force. And you can always tell scenes that he does because suddenly, like, clothing wrinkles are really, really ornate looking and people tend to move their hands a lot.
Yeah.
You know, flex their hands a lot. But the one thing I do have to point out, and I always have to point this out, is the dub makes this way better. I don't think this is nearly as good a show in Japanese.
Really? I've never seen it dubbed. Mm. Interesting.
Here's the thing. Umetsu is not he might even be one of those directors who just doesn't even go to the recording sessions. Right. And so the Japanese version is very like rote anime characters talking. It just, there's nothing special about it. It just kind of is. The English dub was a coastal dub, and they didn't add any dialogue really. They didn't really do anything special script wise other than just make it sound very natural. But the girl that got to play Sawa, just, she sounds innocent and broken.
Wow.
Sorry, there's a train passing.
Yeah.
You don't say.
Always.
She brings this fragility to Sawa that is, it really, really makes you feel bad for her. And they amp up the guy that she's friends with, Obori, they amp up his anger a little bit. And it turns into a very emotional piece where it was a little bit dead before. That played against the exploding bullets and the ridiculous hyperviolence. It turns it into like this kind of very kind of emotionally on edge mood piece that really is something special, I think.
Cool. All right.
Interesting.
I think I will revisit that one then. Sounds good. Okay. So that brings us to my number 8, which is Cowboy Bebop. Thought this might be higher, but nope. It's a really good show. Everyone knows Cowboy Bebop is a really good show. I feel like I don't really need to sit here and talk about why Cowboy Bebop is a good show. But the reason that it's low is that, frankly, like, this is a show where I went into it thinking, like, okay, there's only 5 episodes of actual story. Everything else is standalone. And then remembering, oh, those episodes are kind of slow or they don't really go many places. But I actually found myself way more interested in the standalone episodes than in the Spike versus Vicious stuff. The Jet episodes in particular, I feel like I like those a lot more now. Anything that focuses on Jet is probably my favorite stuff in the show. Still not a fan of Ed.
Hate Ed. Just absolutely fucking hated any scene with Ed in it.
But there's a reason the ship still has never stopped running on Cartoon Network. It is very watchable. It is extremely well made. Music is great, yada, yada, yada. Everybody knows Cowboy Bebop is a great show. But I will say that, like, I wasn't expecting the standalone episodes to suddenly become the reason that I really liked that show, and the Spike and Vicious stuff, I could sort of take it or leave it. But, yeah, Bebop had to be on there. Number 8, that's where it sits.
And I was actually a little shocked it didn't even place for me.
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I don't know why.
Why, because it's fun and I don't like fun?
Yeah, pretty
maybe,
much.
Maybe that's why.
Well, there's not enough, innocent characters just being brutalized and killed.
And there's not enough dancer thighs.
You two know me too well.
Yeah.
All right, so that brings us to some reader lists. AC in the 715 lists Rony Kenshin, Trust and Betrayal. Is that 90s? Is it? Huh.
I believe so, yeah.
2, Now and Then, Here and There. And 3.
That's not 90s.
Is that 80s?
That's 01.
No.
That's 01?
Yeah.
Okay, this guy's list is disqualified, but number 3, Utena. Big on Anime list, Kenshin, Bebop, Trigun. Charred Knight list, Giant Robo, G Gundam, Outlaw Star. That's a very
Outlaw Star.
Did not get a lot of Outlaw Stars on the list. I rewatched that myself, or rather, I started rewatching that and then stopped because I don't really like that show that much. It's okay.
It's very, like, you know, masculine action, but aside from that, you know, meh.
It's a show.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good, but it's ugly. It's hard to get past the very dated character designs. It's, not in a good way.
It's very ugly.
Yeah.
Aisha Clan. Jesus, what a character design. Okay, so that brings us to our number 7s. And Mike, you are up.
Okay, here's another one that's a bit of a personal choice, but this one has gotten quite a bit more acclaim than Madball. It's not directed by Satoshi Dezaki. It's directed by his late brother, Osamu. And it's an OVA series that spanned most of the decade. It's the Blackjack OVAs.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean,
Yeah, I definitely think Dezaki should be represented on this list. If you're not into the Blackjack OVAs, you could kind of substitute in the TV show Brother Dear Brother, which is very interesting and twisty-turny, but significantly less, significantly more crazy. Blackjack is just, it's a really good medical melodrama that just goes to some very strange places. The characterization of Blackjack is just spot on. Made me fall in love with the franchise, made me investigate a lot more of Tezuka's work, and it's just great animation. All of the tricks that Dezaki uses, he uses in full force, he uses well. His character designer, Akio Sugino, does great work. The animation is high quality throughout. It's very good anime.
Cool. Yeah, I've seen most of those, I think, but it was a while ago. And they were very visually very striking, but it's Dezaki, so of course.
I think this the show's probably the most approachable of his, of the ones where he went full out, you know, the theatrical, the postcard moments, you know, the whole kind of 70s vibe thing. I think this is probably the most approachable of those.
Yeah, I've shown Blackjack OVAs to like not real big anime fan friends, and they've gone over well. It's that kind of show.
Cool. Okay. All right, Justin, that's you.
Okay, so my number 7, I've talked about a lot, but I love it, so Please Save My Earth.
Right, okay.
The OVAs. I still consider it a huge shame that they only did basically 3 of the Tankobon the 21 volumes of manga that this spanned. We only got 6 OVAs that were fairly quickly paced. And the last one just kind of started a new arc that it never really wrapped up. But notable for 3 things, really. First is the music. This is one of 2 collaborations between... Actually, no, I think the only collaboration between Yoko... No, there's several... Collaboration between Yoko Kano and Hajime
Mizuguchi.
Mizuguchi, thank you.
Yeah.
Who used to be married, are no longer.
Yeah.
And are amazing, amazing composers both, but very different in style.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, Mizuguchi does the lion's share of the work in Please Save My Earth. And you can tell.
You can. It's very, like, kind of... It's music that doesn't really stand out. It's, you just kind of sit in it and does a really good job of building mood. And Yoko Kano in the show, I think the only thing that she did in the show is the really haunting, memorable ending theme, which to this day, you know, makes me a little misty. It's just so, such a great song. So that's one thing, the music. Second is... there is such a huge cast in the show, but you feel for every one of them. And the lead character, Alice, who is, you know, there are so many lead female characters that are just these, you know, quiet, you know, wallflower types. But, and I'm typically not all that sympathetic to those sort of characters because I'm just like, I want to throttle them. It's like, fucking do something. But she's quite sympathetic, and I think you can tell that she puts up a good fight, even though she is just kind of feels backed into a corner constantly. And it has this kind of sense of wonder that you still feel as a teenager, and it's about teenage characters, so I guess it's fitting. It has a sense of wonder that I think kids that are getting into fantasy stuff really kind of hope for in their lives, where the discovery that there's something beyond themselves, that they have a bigger significance in the universe than they anticipated. That feeling, I think, is something that is pretty unique to this series. I really love this show, and I love the manga, and I consider it one of the great works, honestly.
Interesting. Go ahead, Bamboo.
Oh, I was going to say, I agree also that, I mean, it's a really great show. It's just really beautiful. Like, the music's great. I just never really liked it quite as much as you did because of the way that they did have to condense the origin. It just feels so incomplete, you know, like I want more, but it's not there. And so, like, that kind of just left like a kind of a sour taste in my mouth.
I mean, we went so long between this show becoming available and the manga being published in English, which it has been now, so you can, there is more if you can find the manga, and it's not that hard on eBay.
But, yeah, that was my issue with it, too. I felt like, especially the third act, the last couple of episodes, it just kind of bull-rushed through the material, and it sort of lost me.
It did, but that whole arc with Shion as a kid and being raised by the adoptive father,
yeah,
that fucking ripped my heart out. Really? It didn't for other people.
Well, it seemed a little facile to me because of the way that the beloved fake family members that he had were suddenly taken away from him.
Right.
I thought that was a little manipulative.
That's fair.
Yeah. But I mean, it's good stuff. It's not something I squirmed through. Definitely a good OVA.
Okay. So that's your number 7, and then Bamboo, that's you.
So my number 7 is actually Cowboy Bebop. Okay. for the same reasons that you had. It's a fun show. I also kind of agreed that I really like the standalone episodes a lot more. Mainly just because it's one of those things where, like, if it's on, you just watch it, you have a good time, you don't really have to sit there and, listen to, like, opera music while slow-motion action scenes are happening. I just think it's a lot easier to, like, swallow, like, one standalone episode at a time. Mm-hmm. But I really like it. I just think the music is phenomenal. I think it's really great entertainment for fans of, who aren't just, like, teenagers, I think it's really great, all age appropriate show. That's really fun. Even though I really fucking hate Ed. He's just the worst character.
So I don't share everyone's hatred for Ed.
No,
neither do I. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Oh my gosh. There's just certain purpose in that show. She's not funny. She's not interesting. She's just
sound her amusing.
What? Well, you have a terrible sense of humor then, Justin. She's not funny at all.
I guess we both do. And for me, she's worth it just because of the episode where you get to meet her dad.
Okay, I'll give you. Yeah, that was a good one. I'll give you that. Yeah. I'll give you that. That was a good episode. I enjoyed that. Probably the only Ed-centric one that I thought was good. Okay. Anybody else have anything to say about Cowboy Bebop?
It's going to be charting on mine in the future, so
okay.
I'll hold off on it.
We'll get to it again.
yeah, sure we will.
All right. User lists for number 7 is Cecil 234. Number 1, Cardcaptor Sakura. Number 2, Eva. Number 3, DBZ. Harlan Man. Number 1, Giant Robo. Number 2, Eva. Number 3, Gozen Sosama Banbanzai. Anybody know?
Oh, yeah. That's an obscure Mamoru Oshii.
Mamoru Oshii, yeah. Yep. Yeah, I haven't seen it. I can't comment on it. It's interesting.
It's on my pile, but it looked delightfully weird. It looks more Urusei Yatsura than his the stuff that we know Oshii for today.
Hmm.
Okay. Invalid Name, Escaflowne, Bebop, Utena, and Maru Homu Magica, Kenshin, Utena, Eva. So obviously these are all seminal works that made a lot of people anime fans. I think
I'm detecting a pattern.
The late 90s I think made more people anime fans in the modern sense than almost any other period of time.
Hey, I think I speak for everyone when I say we are all trudging through our formative years when we make these lists.
Oh, wait, yeah. I never listed my number 7.
Oh. Uh-huh. Oops.
I was wondering when you're going to get to that.
I will edit this in. Okay, so that brings us to my number 7, which is Perfect Blue, which I thought might be higher, but it's not. And it is a fantastic thriller. It is incredibly impactful, even today. I got to tell you, I have probably seen this movie a dozen times, and the simulated rape scene makes my flesh crawl every time. I have to look away.
It's so uncomfortable.
But when a movie does that to you, and it does that to you over and over and over again, and every time you see it, you go, that is fucking phenomenal direction right there. I mean, we all know Satoshi Kon was a goddamn genius. But this is an early piece of his work. And I'm with you, Justin, when, watching this thing again, man, the compositing is rough.
Yeah.
This is a rough-looking movie. Everything's got this thick black outlines on it. It is a little bit of a production-wise, it's questionable.
The opening shot, one of the opening scenes with all the nerds walking about and talking.
Yeah.
That is just one of the worst animated scenes in feature anime history.
But yeah, the tension rises and rises and rises, and it just gets almost unbearable. And the finale is amazing. This is an amazing thriller. It is one of the best thrillers I think I've ever seen. Top-notch stuff, but everybody kind of already knows that. This is sort of just rehashing obvious truths at this point. But yeah, Perfect Blue, number 7.
Yeah, it's further up on mine, so I'll get to...
Okay, yeah, I figured other people would have it up higher. Okay, but you know, having revisited that and then all the other stuff I revisited, this is one of those that could have been number 3, could have been number 6, you know, where are you going to put it? You know, you gotta stop reshuffling things around at some point, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and get to our number 6, and Justin, we're starting with you this time.
Okie doke. My number 6 is something I didn't think would place, but upon rewatching, I had to put up pretty high, and that is Macross Plus.
Oh, okay. Nice. That's higher on my list, too.
Mm-hmm. I do like fun, so fuck you guys. Macross Plus is, I think, the best action Hollywood-type anime ever made. You can show this to almost anyone and expect a positive response.
Yep.
You can expect them to get what you like about anime from this show. And once things really get – there are a couple weak parts, like all of episode 3, for example. but for the music is incredibly memorable and unique while still being fun and poppy. The action is so well done that it holds up incredibly well even by today's standards. And the dub, of course, is phenomenal. You have multiple Emmy winner Bryan Cranston in his only lead role in an anime and just completely stealing the show.
Oh, he kills it. It's great.
It's the best anime dub performance possibly in anime history, I think. And you have a masterful command over the action, so intense that I don't think it's possible to get through episode 4 and really watch the thing without getting up on your feet at least once. Like, I don't think I can stay sitting while watching this show. It is just, it gets your blood flowing that much. It keeps you on the edge of your seat so well that it's just a great, great, great piece of work. And also one of the first Shinichiro Watanabe shows that you really remember.
Yeah, I rewatched this. It was almost the first thing because it's been forever since I've seen it. And obviously it's higher up on my list. But I'll just say, like, my initial reaction once I got, like, it was about halfway through episode 2. And just yelled, like, God, this is so fucking good. Like,
right?
How is this so good? Like, it's great. But anyway, I'll talk about it a little bit more later. But great pick.
Likewise.
Okay. I think that's why this is not taking us that long to get through these, because our lists are very similar just in the order.
I was going
to
say, was there more division in the 80s show?
A lot more.
Okay.
Yeah.
We had Tim Eldred on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was educating us at that point. But, okay. So that brings us to Bamboo. You are up next.
So my number 6 is Utena. But specifically, I really, really love the adolescence of Utena.
Isn't it 2000?
It's beautiful. It's 1999.
Oh, okay.
It just made the cut. Obviously, I also love the original series, but this movie I just thought was so freaking beautiful. It is like in-your-face, just visual explosion of just like gorgeous imagery and scenery. That scene in which Utena and Anthy are like are on the rooftop and it starts raining, right? Like there's the sprinklers and there's like roses flooding from the ceiling and it's like raining down. I just think it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I've been able to watch this movie over and over again and then just be blown away by how gorgeous it is. I also really love the symbolism in the movie. I mean, just as this like extended kind of giant allegory for growing up. I mean, I just think it's so thought-provoking and so interesting. And I never get bored watching this movie. And the soundtrack is phenomenal.
Yeah, this may come as a shock to you, but it's higher on my list.
No.
I rewatched that just like last week. I think I watch it every year.
It's so gorgeous.
Yep. It's a great movie, and I'll talk about it a little later.
It's just like there's so many scenes in that movie that are all like one of my favorite scenes ever, you know, just in any anime ever. Like the one with the roses cascading down from the rooftops, like the end scene in which, you know, Anthy is riding away on this Utena car, like I think is brilliant. It's just such a brilliant scene. And I think people who watch that film and are like, well, this movie doesn't make sense. It's like, well, then you didn't fucking think about it. Like,
honestly,
it's a really solid movie.
The people who say that they must be so oblivious to metaphor that the world's most obvious metaphor, so obvious, it's basically a joke.
It's in the fucking title.
Somehow it escapes them. Somehow they're like, what? You're like, you're kidding me. This is the most basic fucking symbolism.
She encounters Toga and he's literally caged and then he starts to drown. You can't see any subtext there. None at all.
No. And then all these, because like, I remember when this movie first came out, a bunch of people were just like, I don't know. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. And it's just about lesbians. It's like, well, you're fucking stupid. And you can't, like, I don't know how you watch movies at all. It's such a good movie. Holy shit.
It is baby's first abstraction. It really is. It's great. It's fantastic. I love it to pieces, but it is baby's first abstraction. It's
Ikuhara is an amazing director, and I just think he must be so difficult to work with because he hasn't had too many bites at the apple since Utena.
Well, also the movie bombed horribly in Japan.
Well, yeah, but I mean, a lot of great directors have bombs. They recover in a matter of a few years, and it just
That's
seems
true.
Like yeah, you'll see him pop up as a guest director, or he'll do a couple of cuts or storyboards for an episode, but. He hasn't had his next big project, really, has he?
Yeah.
I wonder how many.
Well, I mean, Penguin Drum.
Yeah,
Penguin
Drum, that was obviously a big deal. But I was under the impression that after this movie, he started doing a lot. Like, it was much more appreciated here in the States. And so he spent lots and lots and lots of time at anime conventions.
Oh, he did.
Didn't he? Yeah. He didn't move at some point?
Yeah, he lived in LA for a couple years, I think.
Yeah, and I think it was in 2000. I think I saw him at like three or four conventions, like in the space of a few months. Enough that at Otakon, he actually recognized me in the hall.
He's just hiding in America. We're the only people who still love him.
Okay. So for number six, Mike, that brings us to you.
Well, a few folks on Twitter pointed this out. I initially was just going to go with Pat Labor 2 because Mamoru Oshii belongs on this list, and this is arguably his best film, even though it's not really his most accessible work of any kind. But the thing about Pat Labor is the majority of it was produced in the 90s, so you could probably broaden that out quite a bit. And that makes me happy because I think the TV series and OVAs, it's not quite as dense and satisfying at the end of the day, but it's just really enjoyable viewing. I really like what Masami Yuki does with science fiction in Pat Labor. It reminds me of an interview I read with the sci-fi author Arthur C. Clarke once. It was in the late 80s, and the interviewer was asking him, well, what do you think the most important technological innovation in the next few decades is going to be? And Arthur C. Clarke just said, you know, personal portable telephones. And he was spot on. And I love the idea of just like, yeah, it's something mundane changing our lives incredibly. And Masami Yuki looked at giant robots and he didn't see superheroes or war machines. He saw farming equipment and construction, you know, construction machinery and that kind of stuff. And I love the way the robots are used in that way. And I just love the breadth of personalities in the show, too. You know, you have Noah, who's kind of the stereotypical, you know, tomboy, go get him anime girl. But, you know, you got a trigger happy idiot. You got, you know, the prodigal son who's feuding with his father. And you got the wise captain. You got the kind of impetuous American character. And all the way up to, you know, there are entire episodes that are devoted to the crew of mechanics. You know, there are the old guys in the garage. It's just a very great, just really, really entertaining sci-fi show. Carl Horn has described it as anime's version of Seinfeld because it's a show about nothing and robots.
I agree, although Pat Labor 2 is obviously different on another place on my list.
Yeah, I mean, the
probably
thing
guess
is
how high up it is on mine. But.
Yeah. That's part of why it's just like Pat Labor. The second movie in particular is just it's hard to marry it to the rest of what Oshii and his team created.
Yeah,
it's
I consider like, it. My point was, I kind of consider it a completely separate thing. I don't really consider it part of Pat Labor.
Yeah,
first movie definitely, but not two.
Yeah. Yeah, but in any event, Pat Labor in general, the franchise is absolutely one of the great anime of the 90s. I tell people this constantly, but you can still get movie one and movie two. I don't know if Right Stuff still has it, but Amazon for a while has had those movies for like $15 for these gigantic collector's sets that have fully translated storyboard books and like 150 page long production material books. And if you're a cinephile or a big anime fan and a fan of the technique of animation in general, they're just incredibly valuable to have and to go over. And I think it's a shame that you can't really see the rest of the series in any real legal way at this point. It should be on Netflix.
And the UK dub is also impossible to get.
Yeah, the UK dub, which is one of those UK dubs where it's just like, no, they did a great job. They did a fantastic job.
Yeah, the CPM dub of the series, not so much.
Oh, God. I feel like every single person in that was miscast. I remember Dave Merrill, he wrote a review for Anime Jump when I ran it back in the day, where he said, problem with this show is just like, yeah, the main character, Asuma, opens his mouth, and you can tell he's trying to act like Ota, who is the trigger-happy idiot. And it's just misstep after misstep in that vein.
Well, you want to know what happened. I got to go into to the dub sessions to record a behind the scenes. The director wouldn't even come to the sessions.
Well, yeah.
It was literally the dub cast being given the subtitle script, not rewritten at all, go in the booth, no direction. If it's not long enough, let's kind of haphazardly add a word or two to make it fit.
So they just kind of had to figure it out, and the performances are just what they went with their gut. Oh, man.
Zero direction. Zero direction, zero rewrite.
Wow.
It is a train wreck, and you can tell. I'm still angry about it.
Damn.
Because that is a show that lives and dies by its characterization.
Yeah. And the thing is, that dub is kind of unwatchable, which is a shame because, the manga dubs of movie one and two are some of the most watchable dubs ever made. But, yeah. Okay, Pat Labor, that's my number six.
Sweet. Okay, all right, so I guess that brings us to my number six, which is my Cheatin' Ghibli slot. I did this in the 80s show. I just put all my Ghiblis in one slot. And only two, Porco Rosso and Princess Mononoke, notably left off of Justin's list.
Mm-hmm.
These are probably my two favorite 90s Miyazaki. Well, obviously they're my two favorite 90s Miyazaki, but I would probably list them as number two and three on my overall list of favorite Ghiblis. Porco Rosso is an easy tie with Nausicaa for my number one. I think not only is this his most adult thing, it's also maybe his most personal. Actually, I don't even think that's a question. Like, this is
undoubtedly. Yeah,
it is his most personal film. Also happens to, I think, be the most fun. Porco Rosso is a wildly entertaining movie with really, really great characters, fantastic soundtrack, and you're rooting for Porco. And he's obviously supposed to be Miyazaki, and it's the one time where you watch that and you're like, you know, Miyazaki maybe wasn't always a total just grumpy shit. Like, I mean, Porco's kind of a grumpy shit, but he's got a sort of a lovable old world quality to him, and fantastic character. The dub on this is very nice, too. I actually like the dub a lot. They got, I think it's Michael Keaton playing Porco.
Yep.
And Cary Elwes playing the heavy, and this is good shit, man. That is a great movie. I have to admit, like, I'm not a big airplane guy. I know that's a thing. There are guys who are airplane guys. I'm not really one of them. So the obsession with flying machines gets a little bit on my nerves. But, man, it's such a good movie. And Princess Mononoke, I feel, is the perfected version of Nausicaa in that it's a similar story, but it's obviously designed cinematically and designed for the screen, and the story is designed as a movie as opposed to an adaptation of a much larger work. And so I feel like it's a more complete film narratively as a result. Some of the imagery sticks with me to this day, and is being continually ripped off in other movies. But as a sprawling epic that hits on all of Miyazaki's major themes, I feel like Mononoke is probably the most representative of his work as a fantasy filmmaker. And it also helps that it's very, very entertaining. It's one of those movies where if I start it, I got to finish it. Yeah. There's a reason that it did so goddamn well in Japan and was such a phenomenon.
That's interesting because I haven't revisited it lately, mainly because the DVD is crappy. It's not a very good DVD.
It's not a very good DVD. But yeah. We'll get the Blu-ray at some point. I was kind of expecting myself to be a little bored by it, but I'm so taken with the way they do the giant animals in that movie, where they don't move their mouths, they just sort of growl, and they have these, like, really low sort of ancient forest. It's like the perfect, like, ancient forest god voice. Like, it's done so, so well. Fantastic shit. Love that stuff. So that's my Ghibli slot.
The ancient forest god voice of Gillian Anderson.
The dub is not great. I wouldn't say it's awful.
Hey, they get an A for effort in that dub.
Sure, Billy,
they do. They do.
Billy Crudup and Billy Bob Thornton, both.
But before you get to the Twitter lists,
yeah.
I have to apologize for earlier. Apparently, now and then, here and there, straddled the 1999-2000 New Year.
Ah, well.
So.
Whatever, man.
You know people will nitpick that. So.
Yeah, they will. Okay, user lists for number 6. Closing out this first episode of our Revenge of the 90s show. And we'll do a little fun stuff after this, but Embermoto lists Yu-Gi-Oh, Digimon, and Zoids.
Oh.
Wow.
There you go.
Okay.
Yikes. Was Zoids 90s?
Yeah. Zoids has been around since the 80s, man.
I know the toys were. I thought the anime was like a 2000s thing.
I could swear there's 80s Zoids anime. Could swear.
Really?
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but I know there's at least 90s Zoids
anime. There was animation in the commercials, but...
Well, I don't. Oh. Look, man, I'm no Zoids expert. something I'll be very proud of.
Don't worry, I'm sure someone in the forum thread will tell us all about it.
I am sure. All right, Cassian Eves, Porcaroso, Lane, Cardcaptor Sakura, Jaren Imenich lists G Gundam, Memories, and Princess Mononoke. Memories, runner up for me.
Me too. One of them is really good. The rest are good.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to talk about it later.
Okay.
And the one that's really good, you're talking about Stink Bomb, right?
Right.
Yes. Super Deformed lists Tenchi Muyo, Ramen 1/2, the movie, and Gundam Wing. Oh, this is joking. He's kidding.
That's a joke list.
That's a joke.
I am liking the fact that there have been several nods to G Gundam, and no one's given any love to Gundam Wing. I think time told on that one.
Gundam Wing
seems
like
a good show.
Gundam Wing seems like it's just a big joke now.
Yeah, if you loved Gundam Wing, listeners, when you were a kid, go back and watch it now and marvel at how ugly and badly animated it is.
I have a lot of Gundam Wing toys. A lot of like little tiny Troa figures.
We've given a couple shows a pass for having shitty animation already, so that's not the most convincing argument, but there's really not much else to the show either.
Yeah. Well, brand new.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go.
Oh, I have to go first. Okay. When I watched it on VHS, to do that dumb little YouTube video I made about it, I really was taken at just how ugly it was. Because just in general, Gundam shows, there's a minimum amount of effort there, and I feel like they really lowered the bar in that one.
Remember the episode where the blonde kid puts on a clown costume? Anybody else remember that?
Oh, shit. God. Yeah.
Yes.
That's like, I remember that, and I remember the part where the Chinese kid, or it was a Wu Fei, had to fight wolves.
What the fuck?
Oh, Gundam Wing.
But I really liked it when I was like 12. It was awesome.
Yeah. Okay. And GBUFO sent in number 1, Cyber Team in Akihabara. Number 2, Ugyu, 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 Ugyu. Okay, some people were fucking with me. All right. Okay, so before we cut this one off and get into our number five through number one, which will be next week's episode, I did ask you guys, hey, you know, root around in the dustbin of history and let's hear some of your favorite 90s movies or TV shows or songs or what have you. Did anyone come up with a list for one of these?
Yep.
I came up with a list for both movies and songs.
Oh, all right.
I came up with a list for songs.
Okay.
I did movies.
Yeah, I think I'm the only person who, after proposing this, promptly forgot to do it. But I did come up with a quick list off the top of my head of some, like my 10 or 15 90s movies that just I will watch over and over and over and over and over again and are in my pantheon of greatest movies of all time. But Mike, let's do your movie list.
Okay, my movie list, high up on there, which I think was a movie that I think was horribly snubbed at the Academy Awards, even though it won a couple, L.A. Confidential.
Hey, that's on my list too.
Yeah, that movie, it just transported me. Great, great film noir. Just it really had the time and place of 40s LA down just really beautifully and convincingly. That same year, another movie I thought was snubbed. I'm not even sure it got nominated for anything. The Iron Giant,
yep.
Which I think is one of the best animated films of the last 20 or 30 years.
Great oh, yeah. film.
My favorite film by the great French director Junet and Caro would be City of Lost Children. Any of you guys see that one?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a stunt.
Yeah, that's another one that just like it did a – maybe story-wise it wasn't great, but it did an incredible job of depicting this really weird coastal city and convincing me it was a real place that really existed. It was a fantastic, very reality-defying movie, but it felt very real to me, and I liked that about it. Let's see, another one would be Run, Lola, Run. You guys see that one?
Of course.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of those quintessential 90s movies for me.
And, yeah, thank God that was a Blu-ray launch title. That's all I can say.
Yeah, yeah. It's got this ridiculous techno soundtrack. It has, branching paths of fate. And it has, Franco Potente being hot, doing a lot of running and smoking cigarettes. And last is my favorite 90s movie soundtrack, which would be Jim Jarmusch's Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I got to say, both Run, Lola, Run and City of Lost Children came out while I was in film school, so you can imagine no one would ever shut up about either of them. I have seen Run, Lola, Run probably 25 times or something like that.
I like that movie an awful lot, but no one needs to see that movie that many times. It's a simple movie.
And I should say City of Lost Children, and I can speak from experience here, in the early 2000s, really big fan favorite of playing that on the TVs in a goth club. That was a big deal.
Wow.
So, Bamboo, you mentioned you have a song list.
You know what? I actually just now came up with a list of films.
Oh, okay. Well, let's
off the top of my head,
let's do movies. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Do your movies.
Forrest Gump.
Okay. Really?
Fucking great movie, because I've seen it like a million times, and every time it's on TV, I have to watch it again.
Some of the worst special effects.
Yeah, it's such a rough story. Don't be a downer. It's great.
Writing.
You know what? No, it's great. It's fun. I love it. My Club is really fun.
Yep.
American Beauty, brilliant movie. Saving Private Ryan, and I love The Truman Show. It's actually The Truman Show is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I love
Truman Show is legit. Yeah, it's a very good movie.
Great, great, great movie.
I actually have a different Andrew Niccol on my list. So,
okay, well, let's just do our movie list. And Justin, go ahead.
All right, I also have Run, Lola, Run on here. Buffalo 66, which is the
wow.
I love this movie so much. It is so quirky and funny and terrible as far as like the people. It is truly about
refresh my memory. Is that Don McKellar?
No, Vincent Gallo. No.
Vincent Gallo. Okay.
Yeah, Vincent Gallo, who's already kind of a trashy fellow.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
at any rate, it's basically him mining his childhood angst and basically the this movie, I think he made as revenge on his parents. It is just him going back to the most desolate, shitty hometown ever after getting out of jail for being stupid, and kidnaps a girl, played by Christina Ricci, to bring home to his parents to put on the pretense that he's doing all right. And Angelica Houston plays his just caustic, awful, hateful mother. It's just, it is the darkest comedy, but I love it so. Actually, most of my choices here, with the exception of Run Lola Run, just kind of betray what a navel-gazing, angry, unhappy person I am.
Is it an even darker comedy than Welcome to the Dollhouse? Because I thought that was a pretty dark 90s comedy.
I love Todd Solondz. In fact, he has a new movie coming out that I'm planning on seeing tonight. But his movies, you can only enjoy them so much. But Buffalo 66, I think, has kind of a Seinfeld or maybe more of a Curb Your Enthusiasm sort of feel to it. So I really love it. Number two is Afterlife or Wanda Furudaifu if you're Japanese.
Right.
Really beautiful but slow movie about a way station between heaven and earth, where you have to pick one memory and recreate it in film, and that's the one memory you take with you as you move on. Really, really beautiful film. But if you're the sort of person that kind of enjoys hearing old people tell stories, you have to have some patience for that, because that's a large part of this film. But it's really, really quite beautiful and very moody and just nice. Number three is my Andrew Niccol pick, Gattaca.
Mm, yep. Classic.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. That was a good movie.
Andrew Niccol, I mean, when he misses, he misses. But when he hits, I love him. He's one of my favorite live action writers. He wrote Truman Show, didn't direct it, and he also did Lord of War, a Nicolas Cage movie that I love.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Talk about dark comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. But Gattaca is just this great, noirish, stylish, really has a lot to say about science and society. I love it so. And my final pick is Picnic, which nobody can see here because it was never released, but the Region 2 Japanese disc has subtitles, so if you can import it, you should. Movie about three young mental patients who go on a picnic expedition so they can watch the end of the world.
Huh. That sounds awesome, actually.
It is really good. Okay. Yeah, you gave it to me. It's a great movie.
Oh, I'm so happy you like that movie.
Yeah, it's really good. Although I'm a little thrown, because I would assume number one for you would have been Operation Dumbo Drop.
Well, that would have been number seven or so.
It was almost there.
Almost
there.
Okay, so I actually didn't do a movie list, but it's so easy for me to just pick like really great movies from the 90s, because it was a really good decade for movies. A lot of really good shit.
Totally was.
Just off the top of my head, obviously my favorite movie of all time, Rushmore, came out in the 90s, and my number three favorite movie of all time, Ed Wood, also came out in the 90s. And then also up there, Boogie Nights, Goodfellas came out in 1990, so how can that not be on here?
Wow.
My favorite thriller, Seven, which I David Fincher's.
Great, great, great movie.
Yeah, that's just endlessly rewatchable. I think I've seen that. I must have seen that dozens of times. I never get tired.
Fox.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking so good.
Good shit. And what I still consider to be the greatest popcorn summer blockbuster movie, the perfect summer movie ever made, still is Jurassic Park.
Now, eventually, you do plan to have dinosaurs on your dinosaur tour, right? Hello?
Oh, shit, you are correct.
Yeah.
That came out on my 12th birthday, and it was the best birthday ever.
That was one of the greatest movies of all time.
Indeed.
I was seeing something else that was not Jurassic Park at the theater, and Jurassic Park was next door, and it was so loud that I abandoned the movie and went to watch the second act of Jurassic Park again.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I feel like people don't give that movie enough credit for being the gigantic cultural thing that it was.
So
and being still beloved by people. Like, it's aged really, really well. It's still really great. Like,
here's how transitive it is. Last year, at the end of last year, the Columbus Crew team in Major League Soccer, they got a new jersey sponsor, Barbasol. And there was an endless stream of Wayne Knight shaving cream jokes.
Yeah, of course.
From that movie, yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
this also has one of the greatest soundtracks of all time. It's just such an iconic soundtrack. Oh, goddamn, the movie is so good.
Indeed. Okay, so that's that about wraps up our movies lists, and let's go ahead
Hold on. Let me say one of the greatest thrillers and suspense movies of all time is the 1995 classic The Usual Suspects, because it's the greatest last 2 minutes of a film ever.
Sure. I think I've seen that movie too many times.
All right.
Okay, so that wraps it up for this episode, and we will see you next time with number 5 through number 1.